Well, how have you been?
I have been okay. I've been fine. It's a strange time here, and I don't know if it's a strange time for you in Maine or a strange time there in New Orleans or whatever care. But it's strange here in terms of the business, and I don't know if it's a subject you want to talk about on the air or not. But
Absolutely. Yeah.
it is. We could talk about it on the air because I think it's worthy, a worthy topic.
Well, let's go right ahead. Let's jump right. We
Okay.
can, because this is a podcast, so anything go. You can swear like a longshoreman, and we're
No,
fine
I
with
don't do that. I don't do that.
it.
I've been trying to teach my kids to be nice. I can't be a bad example.
So what is going on in the business? Is it
Yeah,
still part of it? Trying to bounce back from COVID and the strikes?
that's kind of what I heard, but there is a noticeable shift of things, and I began to notice emptiness when I still do voiceovers at various studios. We're not doing one day at a time, of course, anymore. And lately, what I've been doing is kind of films outside the state of California, and there was a clue, outside the state of California. So I was on the Fox lot the other day. It is empty. When I did shows there on Fox, there are always people running to and fro, the different sets and trucks going and things moving. Nothing was going on. It was like a true Pennsylvania, at like 8 in the morning. It's like nothing. I went over to Paramount. Nothing. And CBS Radford, which is where I did Seinfeld, I did several shows over there. They've sold it. They sold it to a British organization. I don't know if it's going to stay a studio, but I feel like the business has kind of left California. And there was an article the other day. Not in the paper, because there is no paper anymore. Have you seen the latest LA Times? Do you have a newspaper in Maine?
We have a couple of newspapers in Maine, but they have also gone the way of other papers that I think at least one of them only prints 4 days a week now.
They had an LA Times in like the grocery store that looked like this. It just said LA Times, and it was about that big. And I'm going like, you gotta be kidding. So like newspapers are going away, studios are going away, and a lot of work is going away. Fortunately, I'm one of these traveling guys. I'm leaving in a few days to go to Utah to do another Hallmark movie, which is
Nice.
terrific. Which is going to be a ton of fun. It's the third part of the Haul Out the Holly series. So we did Haul Out the Holly for Christmas. Then the next year we did Haul Out the Holly Lit Up. And then I had a mysterious lunch with Lacey. I found out she doesn't live that far from me. And I got a text from her and said, do you want to have lunch sometime? I go, well, sure. So we went to the Great Greek restaurant, and she said, how would you feel about doing another Haul Out the Holly movie? And I go, well, yeah, I think that's great. What are you thinking? And I don't know what she was thinking, but we from Lacey's lips goes to Hallmark's ears, and we're doing Haul Out the Halloween. So
Oh.
we've done two Christmases. Now we're doing a Halloween show, Haul Out the Halloween, and it is the script, I've just read it. It is delightful. It is so funny and so charming. And I'm going like, it's a breath of fresh air. It's just wonderful. So I'm very much looking forward to that. That's going to be a blast. So that was fun. This is interesting. I just looped Freaky Friday, right? Freaky Friday Part Two.
Oh, yeah.
And it was going to be called Freakier, Freakier, Freaky Friday, first of all, it was going to be called Freaky Friday Aftermath. And then now I think they're calling it Freakier Friday. So the other day, they called me into loop, and that's when you have to go in and kind of any part of the dialogue that got stepped on or missed, or if they want a new line or something like that, you add that in looping. And I watched some of the scenes I was in, and I gotta say, this movie I think's gonna be a hit. It was delightful. It was so charming, and it was so funny. And I don't know if we talked then about it, but that is when I had my first big health crisis. Did we talk about that?
We did, yeah, yeah.
At that, it was at the end of Freaky Friday, or Freakier Friday, I was starting to do a scene, and I could not see.
And this is what they told you was because of long COVID?
Long COVID. And it was some kind of terrible vertigo. I had terrible vertigo. And now I've been running into so many other people that have had the same symptom. So I'm saying, man, that was, but the looping of that movie looks delightful. And this, I don't know if this is worth anything, but I may be one of the new millionaires. I may be, this could be a big deal. Ooh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Let me just show you.
Uh-oh.
Here we go this way. So you always get gifts at the end of shooting, and they're usually little things, you know, unless you're a big star, and then they give you a car. But no, they gave me a water bottle. However, the water bottle has the wrong name of the movie on it.
Oh.
The first script said Freaky Friday Aftershock. Then I finish my part, they give me my water bottle, and the next day, it was in the paper that they changed the name from Freaky Friday Aftershock to Freakier Friday. So this—
Oh, that's a collectible now.
This is a mistake. And mistakes in terms of collectibles, absolutely, this could be my future right here. this could be worth everything. But that's kind of what's been going on.
So was that Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan? They're both in it. Nice.
Yes, they're both in it. They're both in it, and Mark's in it. But I didn't. My part wasn't with any of them. I played the same guy I was in the first movie, so I run the study hall and detention hall. You know, I'm a nasty teacher and a very small-minded, nasty teacher. And so I deal with the next generation, the kids, like Lindsay was before. So I'm dealing with her kids in this. It's multi-generational abuse from my part. So.
You have played a number of educators, mostly principals through the years, right?
Mostly principals, yeah. You know, I look at Goldberg's, and, you know, I kiss the hem of Jeff Garland's gown, you know, his jeans, because I think because of Jeff, I got a bigger and bigger part on Goldberg's, because Jeff didn't want to work on Monday because he wanted a longer weekend. So they said, well, okay. So they started writing more roles for me and Wendy. You know, so I just will always have a soft spot in my heart for Jeff, because I think that's what enabled me to be on that show for like 8 years.
Well, and I love those scenes in your office with just you and Wendy.
Yeah, that was... Yeah, it was great. You know, Wendy is so funny and such a great professional too. She's just terrific. Again, that was a show like One Day at a Time, you know, where you're just working with great, great, wonderful people that don't cause any problem and are always, you know, they love the project that they're working on, and it always helps. It always helps if you don't have any naysay, you know, any naysayers on the, it's good. It's good.
Speaking of One Day at a Time, I don't know if you saw this earlier today, your old castmate Justina was nominated for a Tony.
Can you believe? Yeah, well, I can believe that. Justina is one of the most talented people on earth. Like when I saw, when we started One Day at a Time, I didn't know she had the voice of God too. So I just knew she was a great actress. She was hilarious. She could do the dramatic scenes and tear your heart out, but I had no idea she could sing. She's like amazing, an amazing talent. So I hope that she picks up the gold on that, or the silver. I think it's silver, but
you must have gone to the Tonys before.
Boy, you cut me deep there.
Uh-oh.
Okay, now do you know what what's behind me? You could see what's behind me, right?
Yes.
You could see this. I'm going to tilt this screen. You could see.
Uh-oh. Did we lose you, Stephen?
Frozen.
Uh-oh. Stephen's back.
I'm back. That was one of those things
that
my
camera
son would say.
Did us in.
Never do that again. I won't. But it did give me time to bring my nomination for the Tony Award. So I was nominated for a Tony Award. And it was big news. This was big news. So they call you up on the phone and they say, Stephen, you've been nominated for a Tony Award. So that morning, I was very excited. The first thing I did was call mom and dad. Mom and dad, guess what? Your son has just been nominated for a Tony Award. And dad said, you have any chance of winning?
Oh, we have the same father.
And I said, well, me and about six other guys, we have yes, we have a chance of winning. So then you get so the first call was to them. The first people to call are your agent, your manager, and the people who mind your account at the bank. These people call you up on the phone and say, congratulations. My wife did not call me up first. Annie was not the first one to call. However, she had to take care of the kids, so I guess it was my bad on that. But so then you have to go to a meeting of all the people who are nominated for a Tony. This was me, guys, the loser. So you go to the meeting and they have a very serious man saying like, okay, this is what you have to do. You, all of you who have been nominated, any one of you could win. You have to come up with a thank you speech. I believe that they said was 30 seconds long. Now it's not 31 seconds. It's not 34 seconds. We are going to cut you off at 30 seconds. So you need to work on your acceptance speech. So when you call up there, you're not going to be hemming and hawing and all that. So now I'm terrified. So I start walking around Central Park because I was living on 81st Street and the theater was on 46th Street. So I walked there every night, a lot of times with Julie Haggerty, who was my partner in crime in that play. So I'm walking back, to the theater. And thinking like, what am I going to say in this speech? I got like 30 seconds. I got 30 seconds to make my point. And I think, well, the first thing I have to do is I got to thank my mother and my father. And I got to thank my great family, my upbringing. Oh, should I thank the rabbi? Nah, nothing for me. How about, let's see, my acting teacher? No, the acting teacher's Jack Clay. Maybe Jack Clay and... maybe my aunt Esther, because she was very supportive of me and my acting growing up. Maybe Aunt Esther, And so now I'm walking back and forth to the theater day after day. The Emmy Awards are coming closer and closer and closer. And I am walking through Central Park practicing this speech, just mumbling, okay, here I go. And then I'd look around Central Park And everybody else is walking around going, I'm thinking, like, is everybody working on their Emmy speech? You know, it could be. So this was the big night. You know, I get the tux. I have the tux. And Annie comes, and she's wearing, like, some kind of gown or something. And so what we do is I have to perform the show. I have a matinee that day. So I perform the show.
This was Mornings at 7, right?
Mornings at 7 on Broadway. And we ran for almost a year. And then we came out to Los Angeles and did it at the Amundsen for about 3 months. It was a huge hit. It was a fantastic show. And so I dress. I finish the show. I dress in my tuxedo. I got it all ready. And then we walk from the theater to the theater where the Tonys are going to be. And we figure what we'll do is at the end of the evening, we'll come, you know, win, lose, or draw, we'll come back. I'll get dressed back in my street clothes. Annie and I will go out and celebrate. We will celebrate win, lose, or draw. So we go to the Emmys. And first thing we have to do is the people who are nominated have to come in for a private meeting before they let the audience in. And the guy who's running the show, that guy, comes in on stage and he says, okay, I hope you've all worked on your acceptance speeches. What we do not want is any of these speeches where you start talking about your parents and you want to thank your parents and you want to thank your speech teacher and you want to thank your wife. None of that stuff. We want original. I'm going like, I am so screwed. I am so screwed. Now, at this point, I hope I don't win because he just told me not to do everything I was going to do on my speech. So it was somewhat disappointing. I was very, very happy that they pronounced my name correctly for the first time in my life in terms of the nomination. Nominated Stephen Tobolowsky for Mornings at 7. They got that right. I did not win. So afterwards, we are kissing and hugging everybody in the lobby, and now it's time to go to the party. And it's at this hotel, and we go there, and I see Beth's old agent, Gilbert Parker, there. And I'm able to thank him and give him a kiss. And anything that I would have wanted to give in terms of thank yous were the people at the party. And so it's now about 12:30, you know, a little past midnight, time to go back to the theater, get dressed, and take the long walk home. However, we miscalculated. And the theater was locked.
Oh, no.
So now I had no clothes except the tuxedo, and I have no wallet. I have no key to go anywhere. It's all in the dressing room. Annie is wearing her party dress, and we got nothing. So we go to one of these places, all dressed up, one of these little nasty little places, you know, in Times Square where you go like, you know, an hour, for, you know, just pay an hour and you get a bedroom. And it's you know, just one of these little places. And I said, listen, you got to trust us. I've got money. I've got money back in the theater. Can you just give us the room for the night? And I promise you, we'll pay you first thing in the morning when they open up the theater. Then I find out, Ann says, Stephen, I have a message. You have an audition tomorrow morning. I have an audition. So now I have no clothes, no wallet, nothing. And now I have an audition on 20th Street. So we spend the night in the little bed. We had this little nasty bed. Ann said, I'll take care of everything. You go to your audition. So I walk in my tuxedo down to from 50 some odd street to 30 blocks. I do the voiceover audition. And by the way, that voiceover audition was for What's in Your Wallet. They wanted somebody to say, What's in Your Wallet? What's in Your Wallet? Because they hadn't decided how they wanted that to sound. And so I auditioned for What's in Your Wallet. I did not get that job either. And now I'm walking from 20th Street to 81st Street in my tuxedo. And I'm walking through Central Park. And they're the guys who were at the Tonys with me. You know, they were there with me, and they're playing with their kids. And I'm coming back in my tuxedo, and they're going like, "What party were you at? You know, damn, everybody feels like a loser." But Anne, of course, my wife, dear Anne, she took care of everything. She went back early in the morning, got money, paid the people at the hotel, got everything fixed. And that was not winning the Tony. So that was...
I'm glad I could bring that back up for you. Who won? Do you remember who won?
Oh, do any of us remember? What was the show? Everybody was winning this. No, I don't, but I will eventually. I will eventually. I'll send it to you in an email.
Did they talk to you in that pre-award show conversation about how to react if the camera is on you when you find out you don't win?
No, they didn't. But you know, you are strategically placed in the audience with cameras in front of you, and the cameras always have these little lights. And so the lights go on when they're showing you. So you just have to make sure that, you know, you're not doing anything, you know, not picking your teeth, or, you know, you're not doing anything like this when the camera's looking at you. You'll see that the people who are nominated have to get their placed on the end of the row, and usually very close to the front, so they don't have to do the long trek up to the stage. Rafe Fiennes. It was Rafe Fiennes who introduced me. And he looked me in the eye when he said, "Stephen Tobolowsky for Mornings at 7.
Was it Frank Langella that won?
Yes, Frank Langella won.
For Fortune's Fool.
Frank Langella won, and Alan Bates won. Alan Bates was with him in that show.
Yep.
They won, and Frank was a little nasty at the party. he was in full, like, "Well, good try." It's okay. You know, if he drove, I would let the air out of his tires. But I figured, you know, it's a long road in bare feet when you're an actor. So you just have to kind of take it as you will. But yes, that's the show that won. And Alan Bates, yes, that is correct.
You're going to...
And they went on the road with it, I think, too. You know, right after that, they went on the road with that show, which is a good traveling show, because I think it's only two characters. You know, Mornings at 7 has, like, you know, 7 characters. That's too expensive to travel these days.
So this time when you go to Utah, if it's a Halloween movie, you don't have to wear a parka and wait for the snow in 100-degree heat?
Oh, gosh. That was the first time we did it, you know. Yeah. First time, it was amazingly hot. It was like I say, 111. Oh, but here's the fallout of the first time. You know, we never hear the fallout except for your show. This is the fallout.
What we try to provide here, yes.
You do. So when we did the first haul out, the Holly movie, it was 100 degrees. I remember one day it was 111. We're wearing all these winter clothes, and they're mopping our brow, you know, we have to act, you know, like we're cold. And they're spraying the trees, flocking the trees with fake snow on the ground, everything. So the flocking killed the trees.
No.
So Hallmark got a bill for something like $600,000 to replace the trees in all these people's yards. I mean, it was something outrageous that they had to pay. And so the next time we did the show, we had real snow. And that was just as hard because the ground is icy and everything. But we have a good time no matter where we go and when we do. It's such a delightful group of people. And it goes all the way to the top, all the way to the producers, you know, the heads of the studio who come to watch us, the director, everybody is so professional. And it's so easy to have a good time working on the, as long as you're not paying for the flock trees. You know, I wonder what it'll be this time. But of course, Halloween's a little easier. you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. Hallmark has sort of taken that, their holiday movies, and you know, now they're doing Halloween. I've seen other ones too. They really sort of created that studio system that doesn't exist that much anymore for their own channel, and it's really seems to be paying dividends.
I think so. I think that's what's they're writing, producing, and directing the shows in-house. And they're developing this group of, you know, writers, producers, all within their network, and it seems to work for them. And I think, as far as the people I've seen, they've been the most successful of being able to continue to produce under the circumstances of, you know, COVID, getting through COVID and the strikes, the two strikes we had in Los Angeles. So Hallmark works outside of Los Angeles. You know, they've been very successful at handling the obstacles.
Did the, Stephen, did the fires get anywhere near you?
They got about this close.
Oh, my.
I remember we don't live on a hill. We live in the valley. And it got to the hill above us. And they were able to put the fire out before it started down the hill toward us. But we're not in a wooded area here where Annie and I are. We're at a place where we could see the fire on the hill. But there's so many people that lost their homes. Yeah. It's shocking. It is. And the after effects of it are unbelievable, in that the areas that were destroyed by the fire all have to be dug up because there's so many toxins in the soil from the burning and the fire and the retardants that were there to put out the fire. It all gets in the soil, and so everybody has to move, and there is a fleet of trucks now that run over the hill every morning. So San Diego Freeway is bumper to bumper, like worse than you ever imagined, with all of these trucks loading up all of this poisonous dirt and all this rubble and ruin and taking it out on barges and dumping it in the ocean.
Yeah, I have a friend whose brother lived in Altadena. His whole neighborhood burned to the ground.
Right. We had at the theater Ann works at a lot, the road, we had two friends there that lost a portion of their home. They were able to save some of their home, but they were in Altadena too. So it's, we're lucky, you know. When I used to live up in the hills, in fact, where the fire came up over the hill, that would have been where the house where Beth and I used to live, up on top of the hill. But when I moved, you know, when life changed and I moved on and Annie and I got together and started having kids, we moved down the hill where I said, you know, I'm tired of having a view. From now on, I want to be the view and just be what the people on the hill look at. And I'm just so glad now that we were so far away from the fires, but boy, the after effects in California, I don't know how long it's going to be terrible for a long time.
Firefighters who went out there from New England are now getting and my son is a firefighter. He did not go to those fires, are being tested for exposure to some of those toxic chemicals. It's serious stuff.
It's serious stuff. It's amazing. It's amazing the size of the catastrophe. And the after effects, and those aren't the things that are in the news, but it's palpable out here. I don't think the state has recovered. I don't think it's recovered at all.
Anything like that is going to take a huge amount of time. I mean, our very first visit to New Orleans was, we flew out a week and a half before Katrina hit. And then we kept coming back after it, and we had gotten to know people down here. And the progress back from something like that is so slow when you're living in it. Especially, I mean, as a visit, you know, as a couple time a year visitor, I could see progress. But yeah, it's going to take a decade or more to sort of they're in the cleanup process right now, as you were saying. So it changes the community for a long, long time.
What you don't realize is the intensity of the destruction. I was watching the TV during the fire, and they had one of the reporters walking through Santa Monica, and you know they always walk in front of a bank or something that was destroyed or something. I had just done a Batman voiceover for a Batman cartoon, where I play an owl. I played an owl in this voiceover. And as the reporter is walking, she walks in front of the studio where I had recorded 3 weeks before, the owl. And it was not there anymore. And I don't mean it was burned to the ground. I mean the concrete had melted. It was like subterranean. It is a kind of destruction that I've never seen before. And then they have to dig out all of that molten, poisonous concrete, load it on trucks, and throw it in the ocean where they can poison the fish, which come back and poison us.
Thanks. Well, listen, I want to end on a positive note. So update us. What's happening with the grandchildren?
Grandchildren are so great. My sister Barbie just came out. Dior is like drawing great art. I don't know if I showed you this. Let me show you this. I don't know if I did. So Dior was drawing. She loves to draw. She does art. And I was saying, what is your picture? What picture are you making? And she said, well, a lot of times you have nightmares, and they're nightmares that make you cry or keep you awake. But also there is this place called the Hotel of Happy Dreams. And you can go to the Hotel of Happy Dreams and you will never have a nightmare again. And she sat down and drew the Hotel of Happy Dreams.
Oh, that's great.
And somebody framed it. Look at that. That is beautiful.
I took it to the art store, and he goes, what is this? And I told him about it, and the guy started crying, and he said, like, it's so beautiful, with the hearts and the wow, 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 and all the people happy inside the building. So I preserved Dior's massive artwork, Hotel of Happy Dreams, for the future. And Ember is a weapon of mass destruction. This child is an H-bomb. I don't know, but she has us laughing all the time because she's just a wrecking crew. And so Annie is teaching Dior how to make her cinnamon rolls. Ooh. And Ember, I'm sure, is going to take those cinnamon rolls and throw them all over the house. But they are delightful. They are delightful. We do as much babysitting as we can.
Long as you know how to divide up the cinnamon rolls properly.
That's right. You know, I get two for every one you get.
Yeah, there you go. Stephen, always great to talk with you. Thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure. It's always great to talk to you guys. My heart, I love you in Maine. I love you in Maine, and I love you down there at Cary. I love you in the Big Easy. I go easy in the Big Easy.
I'm doing my best.
Yeah.
And we can't wait for Freaky Friday Aftershock. Oh, wait, it's not.
Wait.
It's now Freakier Friday.
Freakier Friday. Love absolutely. It. And also, haul out the Halloween. It'll be coming your way.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Stephen. Be well.
You bet. Night-night.
Bye.